All right, this is board time, Wednesday, July 2nd.
We are here. We'll start off with approval of the minutes. Am I the only one that read them?
You're here for.
Am I the only one that read them already?
I think he's waiting for a motion.
Are you good with it? You must be good with them.
I'm good with it.
Okay. You want to take the honors?
So moved. Mr. Chairman, to approve the minutes.
I second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Minutes have been approved.
Yep. Okay, Commissioners, I'm going to make an on-the-fly modification to the agenda by striking item 1.3, Church and Museum.
Okay.
I've been made aware that there are some meetings to occur that will result in the exchange of some information useful to our deliberations.
I got a wind that there was other stuff that we didn't know about, too.
Great.
Now, can we address the crab memo that we talked about in executive session?
Yeah. We have a crab memo here that we're going to...
yes, this memorandum is...
Make a motion to send to crab.
Right, and this addresses the... 1.58 million in road fund monies that were moved into our liability fund over the course of a number of years, and that the state auditor had issues with. The County Road Administration Board says that we need to return the money, and subsequent to sending this letter, we will, in conjunction with the auditor's office, do some study to determine what the actual amount should have been so that we can make subsequent adjustments. So if the board...
And that includes a date.
So, and CRAB stands for...
County Road Administration Board.
Okay. So basically what this does is this makes us... we play it safe when it comes to always making sure we welcome the input from the auditors, and we're always in, have good favor with the CRAB... granting agency, and that's what we're doing. We're just making sure that we are making everything happen.
And the legal counsel.
In other words, we will comply.
Right, right.
And this protects a significant revenue stream for the road fund. And
yeah, and I saw some of that last night. Well done, Mr. Grant Getter.
Thank you. Grant magnet.
You really do very well. I don't know how you do it, but it's amazing. It was almost 5-to-1 ratio.
We try to maintain good relationships with all these agencies. So.
It's all about relationships, right?
Okay, thank you, Commissioners. Ready. In last night's hearing, there was some testimony regarding mining on Yak Holt Mountain. And
what do you got, letter?
Well, this is a letter from last fall.
Once you get that sent off.
You guys will remember with this... Mr. Rogers came in. I spoke to him before the hearing, and then he testified. And I, Commissioner Barnes went out there, I think, the other day with him. Dust isn't new up there. We've dealt with it in the past, and you know, tried to hold them to the conditions. It's mainly a set of conditions that's enforced by the Southwest Clean Air Agency. But dust is a really tough one because when it's on the haul road, it's always been kind of a combination of the Department of Ecology and our code enforcement and clean water to keep sediment off the bridge, to keep the haul road wet so there's not a lot of dust. And then the track out onto the road, that becomes a sheriff issue. If particulate and gravel is blowing off the trucks as it goes down the road, then it's an unsecured load and the sheriff writes a ticket. And then if dust is accumulating on a roof or on your porch, then it becomes a MARTI code enforcement issue because it's a nuisance. So it kind of depends, and dust floats around, and it's tough. So,
well, can I say something on this?
Yep.
Regardless of who does the enforcement, regardless of the authority that's responsible for making sure it happens, the permit holder agreed to conditions that when they transport, they're responsible to not make that degree of dust. They're supposed to stay within the threshold. Apparently, when you were out there, you saw that's not the case. And it's at least, I expect that sometimes they're doing a good job, but it sounds like sometimes they're not. and it would be appropriate for us to be able to have some kind of communication back to them that says to them, you need to do a better job with your sprinkler trucks out there and do whatever you need to do to keep the dust down. That would be as you something that sounds like it's needed. It would help.
Well, there's actually about three other issues out there too, David and Tom. But one of them has to do with the speed. I think trucks that went by me were doing a lot more than the 50 miles an hour, supposedly, big time. And that in the curves, there's some site issues out there where they're breaking new roads, going up into housing developments that you can't see. They're coming around the corners so fast that there's no way in God's world that the truck would ever be able to stop with those heavy loads on it. The other issue that I brought up to Axel this morning was the fact that there's a sign up there that bothers the heck out of me where Stordahl is telling the truckers or private people to come up there to pick up gravel that if they use the other road, which I feel after I went down it, is a much better route than the route that they're using. It's got a sign up there if any of the truckers or people use that other road going the other direction that he will not sell them any more gravel out of that gravel pit. So, yes, and you could see the sign, big sign.
Well, there's a reason for that, Ed.
Huh?
There's a reason for that.
Well, I don't know what the reason is. I'm just telling you what I noticed.
I'll explain to you in a minute.
Yeah, I don't know what the reason is, but to me, I think that maybe we need to take another look at the roads up there because the other route is a lot, the curves are a lot less than the 90-degree turns and stuff that comes up the route they're using now, and there's a lot better sight going down that other road than what there is. So I'm just bringing to your attention what I've seen in a short period of time in about 2.5 hours going up there. So, but there, the dust was a main issue, but these other issues too, the speed, trucker, I know darn well that the truckers were doing better than 50 miles an hour, so it's...
When the problem first started, they came to us and they said, we're having too many trucks going up the road and down the hill.
Yeah.
And so we went to Stordahl and we said, you know, you have an issue on Gabriel Road of sight, of a line of sight. And they didn't have a line of sight, and we were supposed to go in there and cut in that road and take part of that land and clear it. But there was an estate issue, and it was held up because the estate was under consideration or something, so we couldn't get that part done. In fact, to my knowledge, to this day, we still haven't done that. But the Department of Ecology went in there, and Kevin Gray was here, and he bought the corner going to the north.
Yeah,
and he kind of cleared that corner going to the north, still didn't clear off the intersection, the visibility of the line of sight. When you come on a Gabriel Road and look to the south, you see the northbound traffic. And because of that, and because of the accident record that we had there, the trucks were set to go up that road from 503 and come down the other road. It did two things. One, it stopped the accidents from the trucks trying to come out with limited vision. And coming down the other way, it reduced the truck traffic by 50%. That was agreed by them. Now they want to change their mind.
Yeah, so, but the part that I have is a public road. Why in the heck would Stordahl be telling another private business which
because,
highway that he can use and which he can't?
That was our agreement with Stordahl.
Well,
we told Stordahl's trucks to go up Gabriel
and
down
go
Kelly.
That's right. But that's a better route than coming up Gabriel and going back down Gabriel where you got all them sharp turns like this and they're cutting other roads in there that there's no way in God's world that even David with his good eyes could see coming around that corner with a truck that weighs 200,000 or 300,000 tons.
I like to break this down into a couple of different specific issues to deal with. One is if this private business has a sign on their property that they have their freedom of speech can say anything they want within the limits of the law. We cannot dictate to them whatever that is. If that sign is on public property, then that's a different issue. So whatever our preferences or arguments behind that, if it's on, where did you see the sign? Is it within their private property?
I don't know if it's private property or not. It's big sign where the road goes straight up the hill and the road comes into it. Sign right there where whoever hits that T is going to see that sign right there. And I don't know if it's Stordahl's property or if it's somebody else's property, but that's what I'm asking. Okay. If it's not his property, then I know that it's just I'm trying to make it better where people can get in and out of there. David.
So it doesn't look like it's a county sign, right? Does not look like a county sign.
No, it's a private. It's a sign built by somebody that's got a big notice on there. But I don't know if it's on his property, if it's on county property.
Well, if it's on county property, then we have control over what's on that property. And so, Mark, and you can find out where that is. You can maybe show him where it's at.
Yeah, but the speed, too, is a problem, too.
Well, okay, but to keep it separate, if it's private property, we could influence, but we can't control.
Yeah.
And so that would be something you can work with Mark, be able to know where that sign is and make sure that at least we as the county aren't somehow communicating something that we shouldn't. And it sounds like it's probably private property, but I'd like to be able to find out what that is. The other is the conditional use of that mining, of that transfer, the hauling, there were conditions, and the dust was one of those. And so we want, that is one point that we communicate to them in a letter that I think we can all sign that would say you need to do a better job. And it's not that you're not doing any job at all, but at least sometimes at least when you were there, it looked like you could do a better job. So we need to make sure that they comply with that. And so that would be something that the staff can do that. We can sign it. The other is code enforcement has a role to play in this, and the encouragement for us to communicate with code enforcement say, hey, pay attention to these operations there. The neighbors are sensitive to this, and be responsive, because we have a responsibility. When we put those, when the county government grants a conditional use permit that says here's the conditions you can operate, there's two levels of responsibility. One is the mining operations themselves. They have that. And the other is code enforcement. We're responsible to make sure that they do what they said they're going to do. The third issue has to do with the sheriff. And the sheriff are the ones to address the safety. If they're exceeding the speed limit, if they're reckless in their driving, then I assume that it would be good for us to be able to communicate with the sheriff, that Mark and staff can make sure that they would be aware of those kinds of potential error problems out there, and so that the citizens don't just end up with being frustrated that nobody's responding down here. So code enforcement, our commissioners, and sheriff, we can all do our part to not make these the miners bad guys, to make sure that we're all on the same page and that they know, it's trust and verify, that we can trust, and yes, let them know we're also going to verify.
One of the suggestions I would make, the State Highway Department and other construction companies, when they have a lot of dust like that, they use a sweeper. They sweep up that dust before they water it down in order to keep the water from going down in the drainage ditches or into the creeks and stuff like that. And I don't know if they have a sweeper, but there's piles of that dust along the road and along the bridges and stuff that would be easy for them to do it, David, and they could use that stuff that's fallen off the truck. Maybe they can make concrete out of that. I don't know, but it was a bad situation.
Yeah, I've met with Mr. Stordahl, and I encourage you to meet with them and communicate ideas with him.
I'll meet with him tomorrow.
Too. Yeah, he's a no-nonsense, get-her-done guy I think you'll really like. He knows how to get the job done, and he really does want to be a good neighbor, and he really does want to. He comes across as a very responsible person. So if you have ideas that could help him to be more successful on that, that would just give him the benefit of the doubt that he'd be a listening ear and more than willing to be a good neighbor.
And we might have been saving somebody's life up there, but we were there at 11:45 yesterday, 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon. The guy decided to take a plunge into the pool up there at Lucy Falls and never come out. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yesterday afternoon.
You mean there was a drowning?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Hmm.
Hey, in this letter here, it suggests that they have a truck wash.
I don't think
we can do
that.
They don't have one.
Well, that brings up a good question, because I coordinate the response with regard to Yackel, and it's been difficult because you've got the sheriff, public health, environmental services, community development, depending on the issue, public works, and then you've got all the state agencies, WSHA, DNR, Department of Ecology, Clean Air Agency. So, you know, this is a prime example of some of these that are difficult to coordinate depending on the complaint. Now, and you'll notice that letter, I signed it, which, why? You know, I because I'm the one responding. I did circulate that. Senator Benton, Director Benton looked at it, approved it. Ron looked at it. Carrie Armstrong, Scott Melville, and Code Enforcement, they proofed it and approved it to go out. So I have written approval from the correct people to send it out. But, you know, it begs a question kind of how we deal with these things and these complaints. These are hard ones to work with, because they have so many different conditions that require so many different county departments and agencies to
get involved. Want to put them out of business either. That's right. Not my my goal.
Yeah.
I think something that's really important is that maybe spend some time with Axel, and then Axel tell you what he's done over the last 3 years or more. And all the things that we have done, and nothing has satisfied these people.
Right.
Nothing is direct result or can be proven, and they have been everywhere from the health department to the state health department to the people that blast up there and everything else. There's no direct connection with the water loss that they've experienced.
Well, I understand, Tom, that Mr. Chairman, is going through a process now, and I don't want to get involved in that process. I don't want to have to.
Axel did all the footwork, all the way to the state and back.
I got a big pile of stuff for him this morning.
But sometimes it probably just a summary, verbal summary, might be more helpful than trying to read what we've done, because it's been, how many years has it been, Axel?
Four. In fact, I said something to Ron today. I said, you know, the second email I ever got here when I started working here 3 years ago in April was from you asking me to get involved with Yackel Mountain Quarry. So I blamed it. I said it was Ron's fault. But it's been the whole time I've been here.
What I would encourage, this is multiple paragraphs that basically convey a lot of background and that kind of thing. What I would suggest is we send them another letter that just is not threatening, it's not put them out of business or anything like that, but it would basically say, this is a reminder to ask you as a good neighbor to pay attention to these four or five bullet points. Make sure you use water trucks on the road so that and be sensitive to these issues, dust.
Doing that.
Well, what I'm, this is not talking about code enforcement.
No, because they washed it into the creek. And then they claim that the silt then
that's why I say sweep it up first.
Well, let me finish. The idea is that we encourage them to pay attention to address these four or five bullet points, and we list what they are. Wash your trucks so they're not being blown off out there in the road. Cover your loads when the load is above this threshold or whatever, below that threshold. Make sure that you're cautioning again your drivers to pay attention to the speed and the safety on the road. Just those several points, as good neighbors, as reminders. Does that sound like a good idea to do? I'm just saying we send a letter that's friendly.
That's fine.
And responsive, so that the citizens know that we're supportive of this, and it's not a threatening letter, but it's one that assumes goodwill on both sides. The other, I'm curious though, if they cannot use water trucks on the roads, then it's dry out there, you're going to have dust unavoidable. So the question is, can they use water trucks on the road?
Well, then what happened then, they used the water trucks, and then Mr. Rogers came up and said, you washed it down into the creek.
Okay, so the question is, the appropriate level of watering on the roads to make sure that you don't flood it and wash it down into the creeks, but you also don't let it get so dry that it's dust all over the place. So, in other words, it is an appropriate bullet point, to ensure that they use good judgment as to how often they get out there with their sprinkler trucks.
Well, right? part of the thing is too, Commissioner Bedore, up at Livingston Mountain, the same company did a beautiful job of blacktopping the road from the quarry all the way down. I mean, blacktop it. The road that comes from the quarry up there down to the blacktop is a gravel road. So there's no way, and I've been told that he's agreed over the years that he's eventually going to blacktop the road. Well, in the meantime, there's no way that you can do anything other than put water on that to settle the dust, just like any construction site that they go out there with water trucks and water down. So, but, you know, I'll have a conversation with him tomorrow and just...
Isn't the apron off the county road going in there about 100 yards long?
Yeah,
that was a condition. They had to asphalt right. So far off the county road, and then they had to asphalt, I think, 60 or 100 feet of either side of the bridge over Bricky Creek.
Right.
But that's all that was required, the conditions to pave.
So I wouldn't want to micromanage. Probably a letter with suggestions that we've had complaints, and then they might want to address them. And then we also send a note to the sheriff department and have them do more patrols.
But you just don't want to have the public, everybody keep bringing this thing up all the time. Mm-hmm. Why not try to bury it as much as you can?
Right, and it's responsive government. When we get issues brought to our attention, we do what we can with our influence to be able to respond to it so that they know they're getting addressed as best they can. I'm curious, you mentioned that the gravel road, how long is the gravel part of that road?
It's a quarter mile from the scale.
It's not that far, I don't think.
Down to the apron.
Okay, so there's
the make it too slick.
Yeah, from Kelly Road up to the quarry it's a long way.
Okay, so you got the quarry and you got the county road, and there's about a quarter mile of gravel road.
Yeah.
Who owns that road? County or private?
They do.
It's actually what was owned by I believe Longview Fiber, which now Weyerhaeuser owns, and it's leased by the quarry operator. So they have a lease to travel over, and it's more than a quarry. It's I would say it's over a mile.
Okay, so basically it's not a county road, so it's not even our option to pave
the quarry?
It. So if they were going to pave it, it would be at their expense.
Well, yeah, probably.
So can you oil it? Mm. I don't know what the options are.
You can't do that anymore. I don't think you used to be able to use
black liquor. So that's an option. I don't know.
Black liquor out of the paper mills used to go up there by the boats and get that, but they can't use that anymore.
Okay, so I'm not informed on what they do to keep gravel down or dust down the ground.
It would be worse for the stream than silt would be.
Okay, bad idea. I don't know. I'm just fishing for what might help. So when you talk with them tomorrow, I think you'll like him. He's a good guy.
I met with him once.
And he wants to pull in the right direction. And I see you go into your problem solving mode to come up with practical ideas. I expect you guys will hit it off and you'll end up having to come something that will move things in the right direction. Sounds good.
Yep. Okay. So
you can write a letter?
Yep,
is that okay? We're on board there.
Yep.
Okay.
I'll bring it next week.
Real simple, bullet points, friendly.
Yep.
Maybe take Axel with me if he wants to go.
Sure.
Okay, next is hoof rot.
I gave you guys draft resolutions of kind of our final draft version that I don't know if you brought them. I've got some extras here. But I just wanted to ask you if you had thoughts on it, if you looked at it, if you're okay with it. It basically goes through... starts with the basic question, goes through the whereas clauses, and comes back around to what we're recommending and asking the state and the governor to do. There's a lot of information in there. I talked to Chris Cook. She said that I don't do a lot of resolutions for you guys. I've done a few, but usually they'll come from the PA's office. So I asked her about the form. She said I could attach any exhibits or information that I wanted, or I could talk in the staff report about if you do adopt this resolution, you also adopt the exhibits that kind of go to the...
It didn't change it since the last time I read it. It looks the same.
Just a little bit. Yeah. Holly helped me with
and there's only 23 whereases.
I know. I haven't had time to go over them.
Okay.
Well, the bottom line... Go ahead.
I just want to make sure that we're factual.
Yeah.
Because sometimes in the past, when we had some whereases, we got beat up and questioned for the whereases, so therefore I need to read this.
Yeah, and I want to be factual as well, and that's why I asked Chris, should I put the site for each one in here? She said, or you can attach them, or you can not worry about them, but I agree with you, Commissioner. I want to make sure that everything's correct. Most of this is taken from information I got this year from Fish and Wildlife, so it should be correct.
I don't know, the reputation's not quite been very good lately.
I've got a question.
Yes, sir.
Regardless how good or bad or ridiculous or impractical or practical they may be, it has to do with what jurisdiction does this county have, do we as commissioners have, over the forest, the public forest land within our county? I'm not asking to do it, I just want to know what the options are. Does this board, does this county have the authority to create some kind of county law that says you can't spray this and this and this chemical in here until it's approved by some authority that verifies it's safe? Do we know that?
I have a limited understanding of this, but I'll go as far as say, in the research I've done, the counties that plan under the Growth Management Act can go, can incorporate, I think, state forest lands under their jurisdiction, and can issue the timber harvest and other permit applications. There's a process for that. I don't think it's just a, hey, we want to do this type of thing. You go through some process, because those are state trust lands. When they are harvested, it goes into the educational funds for the state, and, you know, there's all kinds of things that come along with that. But I think there is state law out there that allows that ability and allows counties like ours to take a more proactive approach in managing timberlands in their
county. I think there's already two or three counties have already adopted a similar type of resolution like this. Says basically the same thing, and I don't think this is going to restrict anybody from spraying if they want to continue to spray until the legislature enacts the law. What this is just basically indicating that we're pointing out a problem to them, mm-hmm. and the land that lies within Clark County that belongs to the state, up Yakult Burn, up on by where Livingston Mountain, all that area up in there where they continue to spray is maybe going to cause a hazard to drinking water or people's lives and stuff, David, in this community. And all you have to do is just look, not just people, but animals. And like I say, like I told you guys about our hunting experience last year up on the Tootle up there, where we hunted 11 out of 15 days. And we hunt hard, but we always get animals, either Bruce or I do. Never seen one elk except the last day. When we talked to the DNR employees, that they told us up there that that you won't see any elk up here anymore because they've sprayed it so heavy that not even a grouse. We didn't even see a grouse. Usually we take the 22 along, kill four or five grouse, take them home. No grouse, and the reason why is because they're putting these pellets along the size of these new roads that they're cutting in to keep the vegetation down. The grouse are eating those things for food, and the vegetation is all killed off, so there's no habitat there for the elk or deer to eat, so they've left. Mm-hmm. So I think that we have an obligation to the people in this county to make sure that doesn't happen. And I don't think this is going to penalize anybody. It's just pointing out the Fish and Wildlife that they have an obligation to represent the people in Southwest, everybody in the state of Washington and people in Southwest Washington. So
where's the resolution going to go? Is it going to be hand-delivered to the governor?
It's written to the Washington State Legislature and Governor Inslee, so okay. That it would depend on
that's
how
where
we
I have to go. We've already sent the letter to the
Fish and Wildlife,
and haven't got anything. But.
So I've got some questions. This is a influence.
Yep.
There's no law. There's no jurisdiction. There's no. This is influence.
In pecking order, we're underneath this.
Right. And so my basic question is. Well, first of all, What can the state do? And it says, hey, as county, we can influence the state. My other question is, what can the county do? If we can have some, do we have some control? Do we have some jurisdiction? Do we have some regulation ability? Whether that has to do with the participating in the permit process and the requirements, road building process, any of those things that have to do with the state lands that lie within the county, do we have any control?
I think it's a legal question, probably Chris.
Yeah, Cook. It definitely is.
Let's find out.
We are an arm of state government. Mm-hmm. They tell us what to do. We don't tell them what to do
and
with
I
their
think,
land.
Yeah, I think too, David, once you send this to the governor and to the legislator, and to if you send it to DNR too, those folks are going to come back with a letter saying, keep your nose out of our business, that you don't have any jurisdiction over this. Otherwise, they're going to come back and say, thank you very much for giving us a heads up on what's going on.
So, no, and I think more so, when you give it, the more people you give it to,
that's right.
The more education, the
that's
more
right.
awareness it is,
right.
and sooner or later, maybe the legislators get this.
Yeah, I mean,
we
want to
make sure
intention.
Our legislators get it, and hopefully they jump on board, and we'll take action with that.
And also the Forest Practices Board, the Department of Natural Resources has a Forest Practices Board, and they're the ones that really review these rules and regulations. Mm-hmm.
Good.
You got something, Mark?
Yeah, 43 states have some sort of state law that preempts local governments' ability to regulate the use of pesticides, and Washington State is one of those.
Surprise.
So, well, it means that if the state allows it, we can't say no, they can't use it.
Yeah.
But
so
we do need the PA's office to do some research.
All I'm saying is, before we forfeit the fight and assume that the only thing we can do is have influence, that we ought to find out from our prosecuting attorney's office, is there anything that would allow us to either participate in the criteria for the permit process, or for anything that we're missing? Maybe there's something more besides influence. Maybe there's regulation ability.
I think there is to the public health side. I was concerned that when I saw that the state was going to kill the animals and provide them, as I understood it, provide them for food.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought there was, that some of that,
maybe there's
some
something
of that disease.
Axel,
would be
state health department.
Foodborne.
In other words, maybe through it's the public health. Or do we have did you say something about other counties having a role in the permit process for harvesting timber?
I think I got to look into it some more because I know a limited amount about it, but I think if you're a Growth Management Act county, you can either take over or take a much more involved role in state forest practices in your county.
Okay. Can you look into that?
Yeah.
Okay. Otherwise, I think I haven't really studied this.
Yeah.
But the idea here is that you're supportive. Is this good to go like it is, or you want to refine it?
Well,
no, I want to read it.
Oh, okay. So this is the first draft. We'll do our
The whereases.
Okay.
Remember the whereases we got in trouble with before? Everybody wanted to know the facts.
So
you had to put all the references in the end of it.
Okay. Well, one idea. So this is draft, and we'll work on it. We'll all have some input on it. If what we're sharing here is influence, then I would think that we'd want to influence as many of the organizations, the bodies, the agencies as possible.
And we're getting the veterans organizations involved in heavily.
Yes, and so rather than have a resolution that addresses one particular agency, it really ought to be, I suggest, this is an input here, that we would word it in a way that would allow us to be able to send to any agency that staff can help us to identify so that we can multiply that influence.
Oh, no,
this identifies.
Yeah, I thought you could do that now, David, with the way it's written, but it could be wrong.
Well, this is requesting the legislature and the governor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you could add.
No reason the health department can't have a copy.
Okay. Well, actually, let me reword my suggestion. This lists some of the organizations and some of the entities here.
Right.
We want to make sure that if there are others that we're missing, we would include them also.
Okay.
That sound good?
Yeah.
So you can make sure that this is an exhaustive list that you can come up with, make sure we're not leaving anybody out.
Of who we're sending it to?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Where do you name in the resolution? You named some of those organizations already. You're going to expand the list potentially. Great.
Okay.
I'm good.
Good. Fireworks.
One quick question about this, though. I know it's draft, and we're going to take a look at it, but when potentially we're looking at maybe next Tuesday having this on the hearing agenda. Is that a no or a yes? You'll look at it between now and then, or you want to?
That's
where we head.
We got a holiday, and
yeah,
I think it's too soon.
Bridge too far.
We don't work Friday.
Well,
I got
that's
things
important.
In my schedule.
You mean,
July.
But we work Monday.
Yeah, well, right. Recovery, so
we're salary. I guess you decide what day we work.
Talk to my wife. How about you? So, yeah, that sounds too aggressive. How about the following week? Is that okay?
So back again next Wednesday? This?
Yeah, that sounds
yeah.
Like
yeah.
A good way to
yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Fireworks.
Fireworks information was really good, excellent one-on-one page.
Yes, you guys had asked me for
good.
Discharge and mm-hmm. sales time, so that's what I've got here, and credit doesn't go to me. It goes to Holly helping me through John Dunaway, I believe. He had put this together, so thank him. And anyhow, you can see the difference.
I didn't understand all the different colors.
I didn't either.
Except that they coincide from both charts, but then the stuff in the middle. And it looks like we're probably in compliance with everybody but Vancouver and Washougal and Camas.
Yeah.
And then they allow fireworks to be sold for January 1st, New Year's.
Yeah, it looks
and
like there's
don't.
A couple that do.
Several of them do.
Chairman, I have also something on that. Mm-hmm. There were a number of nonprofits who wrote to the board about their concerns about the restriction of the days for sales. And so Mr. Medora asked me to contact John Dunaway. I talked to him this morning, and he's going to send a list of the 40
permit holders
that, and then we're just going to go through them and look and see how many of those are nonprofits, who do they serve, those kinds of things, just as part of the discussion. And I assured him that I would provide all of you with that copy when it comes in, probably this week.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you, Anna. Mm-hmm. I was wondering on the colors, why isn't it red, white, and blue?
It is.
There is
yellow, white.
Mr. Web Genius here.
Oh, you want the precinct results brought up or something?
No. I thought you offered an idea last time of some kind of a survey monkey, kind of a web where people can weigh in electronically.
Yeah, update on that. I misspoke. Oliver is in the process of securing quotes to buy the product. He doesn't yet have it. He expects to have quotes shortly. And then we can proceed to make an award. Oliver's buying that to facilitate the 2016 growth management plan update because we're going to have lots of interaction with the public.
In other words, smart way of weighing, allowing the citizens to weigh in.
Exactly. And Oliver graciously has offered to let every other county department that wants to interact with the public in an interactive way to use that product. And so we should be able to engage the vendor to create the survey materials, and they're experts at writing things in impartial ways, unbiased ways, so that you get valid input from the public. Mm-hmm. So I'd hate to put a time frame out there, but I would expect in the next 90 days or so we'll be able to start interacting with the public on the fireworks question.
So what are we looking for?
I think it's like an online town hall meeting, and you can get the public engaged in a conversation.
What did we spend on the advisory vote?
100 and some odd, on that one.
Yeah, so my point is, we had an advisory vote.
I don't know. We had six votes, so it was about 20,000 apiece.
We're gathering information now to make a decision.
$20,000 a vote?
For the advisory votes, thereabouts.
So what I'm saying is that my personal position is that I wouldn't supersede any of the communities representing the county portion of it. If the cities allow it, why wouldn't the county? So, you know, the county is more open space than the city. The city is more congested. So I think we need to go back and review and consider what changes or what restrictions we might do with the information that we have presented to us today. We have already heard from the people in the advisory vote. And the majority of the people, surprisingly to me, would like to have some kind of restriction. But I can't see shutting down fireworks in Clark County if all the cities don't allow it. I know Ed loves it.
Well,
never mind, Ed.
All of them said three.
So what do you suggest?
That maybe we come up at our next board meeting with our personal recommendations by the information that we have here, if any.
I think what Mark was saying, what Dave was saying, the survey was to find out just exactly how everybody in each of these municipalities, how they feel about the fireworks. Like on Thursday, I'm going out to, I've been invited to go out to Hazeldale, and where the biggest majority of the fireworks is fired off, and stay out there for most of the evening to see how much fireworks is actually there and listen to the folks that are complaining about the fireworks. They're not complaining about the 4th of July themselves. They think that that's fine and dandy, but they think a week ahead of time where they're firing off all night long, 4:30 in the morning, all night long, all weekend long after the 4th, that's what their big complaint is. So I agreed to go out there and see just exactly what's going on. And I think one of the big problems that they have, David, Tom, is the cleanup afterwards. I think that a lot of them would have a lot better feeling about it if the people cleaned up their messes instead of leave it laying on a sidewalk or in the street on their property that belongs to somebody else. So, but I'll get a bird's eye view of what people in Hazeldale think about it, report back to you.
You know, I shared before, I've had fireworks out where I live a week or two ago. It was not like the 4th of July. And obviously, whoever was setting them off didn't buy them in Clark County.
Yeah.
Or,
well,
or Idaho. Or
up in Oregon. Indian reservations.
Yeah. So anything we regulate, we want to make sure that it could make a difference. We have some bad performers, and it makes it bad for those who like to do it. So maybe as we think to come back with something, that we look at buying days versus setting off days. I was surprised that the discharge days up here,
right, yeah,
from the 29th,
yeah,
on.
Yeah, where I live in the county, like straight across the streets of the city.
Yeah, and another thing we have to, Hazeldale's different.
Yeah.
But do we want to go with a populated area that would be different? Or would we make Hazeldale the same as the city and the rest of the county different?
No.
Or do you want to standardize with all the other cities and counties?
I think you'd have to standardize it. Because if you didn't, everybody would go to the area.
You wouldn't know who or how to enforce it.
Yeah. They would really be inundated.
Here's where I'm at on that. We have two different graphs, two different issues, the sale time and the discharge time. Those are entirely different. They're different. One has to do with businesses and jobs and the benefits to nonprofits. The other one has to do with actually setting them off. If people didn't set them off when they shouldn't set them off, then nobody would complain. They could buy them all day long, so I don't set them off, right?
Right.
So we need to keep them separate. I'm going to call them the buying time or the selling time, A. The discharge time, B. The problem is we have both a good thing and a bad thing here. The good thing is that people want to change, and we provided a means for them to voice that, and they spoke, and it says they want to change. The bad thing is that there was zero thought in no deliberation as to what went on that ballot. We tied those both together, and I don't think any of us expected it to pass. But it did pass, so we have to respond to that. The important thing now is for us to be able to allow the people to the most effective, easy, most convenient way for them to voice their way of having a voice both on A, separately, and B, separately. Because we know they want something, but we could just simply do it exactly as it was worded. But the reason that this has to do with an ordinance, county law always includes a formal public hearing that includes, and it's there so that the citizens can voice and participate and inform us and help us to fine tune and get it right. So the means that whatever that software is called sounds like a good tool and avenue that would allow people to participate without having to come down here and sit in person for hours or maybe multiple days at a time in order for us to hear one by one. This would potentially allow thousands of citizens the convenience of weighing in on A and weighing in on B and help us to optimize this. What do you call that software?
It's called Peak Democracy, and I think it's an online Peak town hall.
P-E-A-K.
But Dave, to add to democracy. That, if you put A and B on the ballot, or on the website like you're talking about, and all the folks say, well, I'm in favor of discharging fireworks, and then everybody in the thing says no more fireworks to be sold, where do you go then?
Well, the idea for a public hearing and from hearing from the public as representatives is to pay attention and do what we can to represent them. We represent their views. A lot of these are we can guess at a pretty good guess. We don't know exactly what the foreseeable outcome would be. It's not likely that people are going to say, I want to be able to have more days of discharging them and one day of selling them. I mean, some of these things are... That's predictable.
I'd shoot them off every day, but I know it's not so practical.
Really, it has to do with, if you just talk about A for a minute, when can you sell them? Those 40 nonprofits, we want to make sure that each one of them specifically are invited to participate in this process. So we get that, because I know you wear your job spin, I wear my job spin too. We don't want to kill those jobs. We also want to make sure that we include enough of the community so that we know we're not violating their will.
Yeah, but we don't want to be ridiculous either, to the point where...
I'm with you there. People they're smart.
Okay.
And if we allow them a convenient way to voice that, they'll help us to be hopefully smart in this.
But are they going to say, is this another runaround? We voted once, and here you're bringing it back. We're going
we
to
don't know what
to vote again.
Specifically said.
Yeah.
So, cost of the program?
Well, Oliver's going to purchase the program anyway to facilitate the growth management plan update. And the cost per application goes down the more departments
people
that use it. Right.
So, when you did your survey, did you talk to them specifically, the different communities? When I talked to Battleground specifically, they said that they weren't going to address it at all.
Yeah, I think they said the same thing to me. I forgot that list in there, but I've been waiting for a couple of phone calls back. I did get a call back from, there's only a few, because Camas and Washougal have already addressed it, right? So there's Battleground, Richfield, and Yackel, Amboy area.
East County, Camas and Washougal, they've changed over the years where they've become more restrictive on discharge.
So urban areas want restrictions.
But not on the selling. They've curtailed some of the selling but
too.
It's more on the discharge.
Interesting to see
the selling
if
down
you
here.
Had a... measure that said if you are aware that there are 35 nonprofits that rely on the sales of these, you know, how would you like to restrict the sales? Because I think that would configure in most people's minds. So by separating them out a little bit, you get a little bit better understanding of where maybe the citizens really would have gone with that.
Yeah.
They didn't get that opportunity to think about that, and maybe that's an unintended consequence they may not have thought about.
Good point. There are other unintended potential consequences, too. For instance, let's suppose we restrict the sale of fireworks to the shortest possible time. That potentially could say, well then you're going to have more people going to the Indian reservations where they're not subject to our laws. They can buy whatever they want there. And they could very well, you could actually have the unintended consequences. You're going to have more bombs going off and more flying stuff going off out there because they didn't normally go there before and have access to that stuff. If they stay within an area where it's regulated and it complies to our laws, then you're not going to present that choice to them so conveniently. So there are levels of consequences in these that I haven't thought through, and I expect that not the citizens also. They haven't all thought through this. And it was a given opportunity to make sure that they also hear on this. They're smart. We want to make sure that they're also equipped with the what ifs, so that they can weigh that in when they inform us what they want to do.
Well, I won't buy any fireworks this year because I bought enough last year and I didn't shoot them all off. So I'll just shoot off the rest of what I bought last year.
Did you store them properly?
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. They're stored in a nice home.
So here's what I suggest. Let's come back.
Get the program.
Come back until we get this program up and running. Let's come back and work on it every week until we can land on something. Get more information from the cities, Axel, the ones we haven't heard from, and see what they're going to do or if they're going to address it.
So I think it'd be worth taking a hard look at the precincts and the incorporated cities, too, see how they voted. I mean, I've taken kind of a preliminary look, but they might be interested in knowing how their citizens voted that represent them, you know, that they represent.
You mean this?
Yeah, exactly.
I think there's an advantage to handling or discussing this and having our hearings somewhere not too far in the distant future, because 4th of July is here upon us now, and people are tuned into this, and this is all fresh in their minds. And they'll be more interested to participate because they won't have to go back and think back 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 months ago. So the natural next step forward would be for us to allow the citizens to start getting input. And so when you say 90 days, Mark, I'm thinking, well, that's way out there before you even start asking. Are there other options that are...
They will cool off by then.
I think there's some merit in waiting. I mean,
Yeah, that was a wild guess. So I didn't want to, your expectations to...
You've heard the adage that you don't want to go shopping when you're hungry.
You don't want to have a baby. You don't have, as soon as you have a baby, you don't want to ask if I have another one right now.
You want some cooling off period, but not so cool that it's the middle of winter.
Right. Well, they'll be looking at New Year's to fire off at New Year's. So So, I mean, you're going to have...
If it's September, people will still be fried whether or not their neighbor was blowing off fireworks for a week.
I hear most of my complaints are effects on pets.
Yeah. Well, in East County, it was livestock. Horses.
Well, you're talking about...
I never thought about horses.
You know, none of those livestock, none of those pets are affected at all by people buying fireworks.
No, they're not, but it's about the discharge.
They're about the discharge. Yeah, yeah. And that's why it's important that we keep these separate.
You're assuming that we have all good performers.
No, I know there's always going
to
be...
I have to speak for John Dunaway, since he's not here. But, you know, the longer you give people to own...
The more opportunity there is to...
They get a little antsy. They want to get that funk going or that lighter going, and they want to set something off.
And that's why it's important that we also hear from our sheriff, because he's the one that's going to get called.
Well, our fire marshal's office, they do all the
enforcement
with the sheriff, because they're just, it's so...
The sheriff's going to be up on Livingston Mountain.
Yeah, it's just very pervasive this time of year.
Won't have time to do
all fireworks. Hands on deck for our fire marshal office.
Have they weighed in on their preferences here?
I'm sure John has preferences.
Work in progress.
Can we make sure we hear from him?
Preferences would
to
be
also continued.
Okay.
To work with cities so that you don't have the across the street issue.
Okay, I think our chair said we're done with fireworks for now.
Okay. Keep it alive. We'll keep discussing it until the program gets going.
Yeah, and you know, 90 days, I threw it way out there because I don't know.
You're being conservative.
If he does, yes, if he gets it done in 60,
it'll be considerably less time.
You'd rather underpromise and overdeliver.
Yeah. Yeah. If he gets it done in 60 days,
I've been doing that my whole life.
Do it quicker. If he comes back and gets it done in 60 days, we'd do it quicker.
You'd be a hero.
Yeah.
Sure.
They look better.
Yeah.
Okay. The item 1.6, the risk pool. Chris Horn is slaving away over that resolution right as we speak.
Okay.
So I'm going to move on to a couple of other things in the hope that Chris will come up before we adjourn. I've got a couple of miscellaneous items that aren't on the agenda. Would you like me to wait,
sure,
Mr. Chair, until everybody else goes?
I don't have anything.
You don't have anything? Ed, do you have anything?
I got a maybe a couple questions, a couple of comments. I've been meeting with staff and over the fee waivers and impact fees and that, and I have more concerns as of yesterday than I had before I met with them, and I need to get some more input and have some more conversation with you fellows about the impact fees and the fee waivers. There's some of that I have a real problem with because it's similar to a program that I instituted in 1983, a market recovery program in order to help our employers. Help our employers compete with the open shop, and found that there's maybe some folks in there that took advantage of what the program has done. Maybe some people that shouldn't have got fee waivers, in my estimation, but I don't really come up with that hard and fast right now. But I do want to meet with the staff again. Have another conversation
Sounds
with that
good.
And then express my reviews with you folks. But right now I do have some more serious concerns than I had before I met with them yesterday.
So your concerns more the
concerns are basically, I'll name just two major projects, Fred Meyer's project that to me, that money probably went back to Cleveland, Ohio. Somebody in the office back there, an executive, probably is driving a Mercedes now or going on a trip to Acapulco over the money that he got. Our program that we put into effect had to make sure that whatever the savings were went back into that company. They bought material, they bought pipe benders, they bought new pickup trucks. There's no insurance under the fee waivers now that any of that money that is being saved is even going back into the project, whether it's Walmart or whether some of those major projects on there. It concerns me that fee waivers went to people that don't really need it, and that money could have been better spent on other smaller people in the community, create more jobs that we've been looking to do, David. And I, like I say, in the numbers that I looked at, it is quite concerning, the impact fees. Part of it for roads and stuff. Yesterday we did an action in here at the county commission meeting where we commended Keith and that for a tremendous project. The money that we're taking away from those impact fees could create several projects like that throughout the county that were given these impact fees to maybe where we didn't need to give them because some of these projects I think were planned a long time ago, like I told you guys before I ever come in here. So I have some basic concerns. I could be wrong, but as I viewed them yesterday, it just didn't seem as where it should be landed. And I think the impact fees right now, the economy's picking back up. I think that maybe this is the time that we look at this again and maybe, like you and I discussed on another situation, maybe we could start phasing out the impact fees and stuff over a period of time. But I'm just struck by the fact that there's people got advantage of those impact fees and fees for roads, stoplights, on different streets where we need street lights or stop and go lights and that we don't have any sidewalks. This money could be better spent there, and so that's my personal opinions to you guys. So I want to have more time with the staff to look at them again, the numbers again. I want to talk to Keith again about the transportation side of it. And like I say, I am concerned that maybe we could do a little better job evaluating it. And one, for instance, we had a project here in Vancouver with our market recovery. A guy called me up, and I always run the program. You'd have to call up and say, we need $50,000 more in order to be competitive on that job. And so my first inclination was to call that employer or call that contractor to find out if there was competition on that job, who the competition was. And if he said no, there was no competition on that job, the person didn't get the $50,000, because then I could spend that $50,000 someplace else. So it just, I think the ground rules that need to be set up maybe a little bit different, David, that assures that whatever savings that company or corporation or individual gets, that it goes back into that business and not into an airplane or something else, buying a car, trip to Acapulco or whatever. So that's my comments.
So I guess what I look at is that what was the intent of the fee holiday?
Yeah.
And first of all, I recognize only people with money are going to build.
Oh, I know that. I know that.
Whether it be Fred Meyers or Walmart or whoever.
Yeah.
They already have money. They're the only people that's going to build. If the economy is so bad and the person doesn't have money, they're not going to create jobs. They're not going to build. And whether you build a Walmart or a Fred Meyers, you have to build a building.
But do you think that money stays here, Tom? It don't go back to
Arkansas? No, that savings that we did. Yeah. So you go back and look at the transportation impact, the actual dollars. During the hard times, we were taking in just over $1 million a year in traffic impact fees. You can't build a thing with $1 million.
Yeah, just think how many traffic signals you put in for $1 million.
Yeah, we already have traffic signals. I mean, what do you want?
In a lot of places,
the more traffic signals you have, the slower your traffic goes.
Well, that's fine. So it also is a safety issue too, Tom.
The traffic signals.
Sure, traffic signals safety issue. And that, but again, like I say, somebody like Fred Meyers and those companies like that don't really need it. And a project out there for that gas station that they built, that was in the works for 3 years ago, because I know the owner of the property out there. I know his daughter real well. The property was already in the process of negotiating it before David even come on board as a commissioner. So, I mean, it's, I think that's, like I say, I just want to reevaluate it, and I think there's some places where maybe there's some problems.
The intent was to get the companies off the dime.
I understand all that.
And it seems to have worked, because our permit office has got more permits now than what we've had over the last 3 years.
Okay.
You know, you get that little thing on your computer, shows the charts, and it has the date last year and this year, and shows the number of permits applied for and those that are not.
I have a suggestion. Mm-hmm. Back when we were considering this, our auditor, Greg Kimsey, had a really good idea, and that is to ensure that we have as many metrics that would help us to evaluate, keep our finger on the pulse, so that we can, as a trend, at a glance, know how we're doing. And we haven't done a very good job of that. We've done some, but what I would suggest that we do is that we create and we put right on metrics for everybody to see, that the project speak for itself. Two different things. We have graphs that from time, we can start from 2008, which is the recession that did its thing, and then from there, enough of it, because trends only are informative when it comes to enough time by year. So we have a number of these graph trends. Each one would show both revenue, so here's a revenue trend, 2010 through, or 2009, or 8 through the current, both revenue, another one would be the fund balance, and some of those parameters that would graph, one would be the community development fund, what runs our permit staff downstairs. Another one would be the impact fees for traffic impact fees, so we know what revenue, what is the revenue done? What's the fund balance done? The other one would be the sales tax revenue, so that we know what's been collected in our. So those would be just simply our putting the dash on our dash panel, our odometers and our instruments that we could just glance at, and we'll all understand what's our current state compared to where we were. Sound like a good idea?
Well, the other part that you could add to that too, David, would be jobs.
Yeah.
When the jobs were created, how many jobs are right there when the project's done, or when the project is maybe over 9 months or 2 year period of time, the jobs aren't there until that project is done and the business is up and running. So, I mean, they could estimate, they can tell you, I'm going to create 25 jobs there, but if it takes 2 years to get there, you've got your number you're putting up there, well, we've created 250 jobs, but you haven't created 250, you've only created 225, because 25 jobs aren't there until that building or that remodel, that stuff is completed. So I think you got a good idea. I think that we need to look at that whole thing, but I think it's important that the public is getting their money's worth, and we're not giving money away.
Actually, exactly. Built into that resolution are two basic parameters that says that we will collect from the applicant their estimate as to how many full-time jobs that project is going to create after it's all said and done, and what the annual sales tax revenue is going to be. And it took us quite a while to get to the point where we were asking those questions. But we've gone back and we've collected most of that now. There's still some holes, right? But we've never put that into a trend format. And it would be good for us to be able to, in addition to these other trends, that we would include that and let that dash panel speak for itself. So if you feel like that's a good idea, our wonderful administrator here has a way of empowering his team to turn on the lights, get the dash panel lit up, see how we're doing. Sound good?
I think that's what we get on a regular basis when we get that.
Well, we don't get a trend. We get it instant.
I want to see more road projects than I want to see, especially since the federal gasoline tax is going to go down the tube. Basically at the end of August. State legislature, from what I understand, is not even going to take up transportation at all. They're only going to look at education. So some way the county is going to have to be more thrifty in order to make sure that those dollars that you are collecting go into the transportation.
I like how you think.
Projects. So, okay, I'm done.
Me too.
Jeremy?
Just follow-ups. I want to follow up on the Dolly House, the youth house for the Dolly building.
That's yours.
We kind of canceled our appointment. We probably need to reschedule for you and I to take a morning or afternoon and go for a walk.
Okay.
We'll do that. So I'll put that on my agenda. Waiting for the second wave of excess property.
Yeah,
I think we have a work session I think scheduled towards the end of July.
I saw some emails fly by from Larry, so I know he's collecting the info and putting it together.
Yeah. Before the end of July, I believe.
So one of the things I noticed, the piece of property on 88th and 99th, there's a big sign on there that it's going to be auctioned off. Is that going to be one of the auctions down here at the gazebo?
No. If it's public right of way, it'll be auctioned off.
There's one that we put on.
Yeah, through a process, right? There's a publication that's created. It goes out and
it has a big, huge sign. It says auction.
Mm-hmm.
So
what
went through my mind was that we would have more than just that one piece of property.
Whatever properties we have that are ready to be disposed of.
Okay.
Pam Mason works with a company that specializes in auctioning off properties, so we get a wide distribution across the country so that everybody knows that property is available.
Yeah.
Because we want to broaden the potential bidder base.
Yeah, well, I just didn't know. I just saw an auction, and I pictured an auction.
We needed right away there.
Well, I know how we got it.
Yeah. So
it's a good piece of property, good commercial piece of
Could I ask one question? When you're talking about selling surplus property, is there any place, due to the fact, Tom, that there's not very many places where the voters can drop off their ballots and stuff, is there any one of these pieces of property that might be located in such a way that they're not really worth all that much that we could work with Greg Kimsey and his office? I've been thinking about this for a while, to where we could put one of those, or maybe a couple of those distribution boxes in order to make it easier for the voters in the county, out in the county, further out in the county, not all have to drive down here.
Well, they have dropped.
Yeah, not very many.
Yeah, check with Craig. There's quite a few.
Yeah.
There's quite a few. I'm surprised.
It would be a good idea for you to talk.
Unless you want to go back to ballot voting, I'd like to do that.
The more places you got, the more chance we got of people voting.
I'm not going to schools again. We'll go to voting schools and ballots.
You know, they have so many volunteers that go to different schools and churches and throughout the county.
We'll probably have it right
but
there.
It would be really good to ask him, how's that working? Do you need anything else to supplement that?
Yeah. Ask him if there's more places that they need to have drop boxes. And if you got a surplus piece of property,
enjoy.
Try to get it.
He's right below your office on one floor.
Oh.
Enjoy.
I've been down there.
Okay. Oh, okay. By the way, that prompts a thought. I don't think we have on our own website here something where people can quickly go and find out on anything that's
location.
For auction.
There are 35 drop boxes in Clark County for ballots.
Yeah. I knew there's quite a few.
Great. So
you got them in Battleground, you got them in Washougal, you got them in Camas, Brush Prairie, Vancouver, Le Centre, Ridgefield, Camas. Yeah, they're all over. Yakult has one.
Just think it out loud. I want the voters to be able to get the
good idea, but our county auditor looks like he's done a pretty good job on that.
So back to the auction thing for a minute. So you're going to talk with our auditor and find out, make sure he's happy? Okay. When it comes to the auctions, do we have any place on our county website that lists anything that's for sale?
We just recently changed. We used to send all of our surplus property up to the state, and they would dispose of it for us, but it typically costs us more to do that than we'd get back, and so we are now auctioning off our own property locally, and the purchasing folks advertise that.
Okay, so is it on our website?
I don't know.
Can we pursue and see if we can find a simple, convenient way for?
Well, it depends. If you're talking about surplus land, then yes.
Yeah.
If you're talking about pencils, furniture, and surplus equipment and that sort of thing.
Confiscated stuff.
The lands, the auctions. We have an auction here every Friday, right?
That's for the bank stuff.
No, that's for bank.
Yeah, that's not a county deal.
That's not a county thing?
No, that's private.
Okay. For how often do we have county auctions?
Usually
twice a year.
Okay.
Yeah. That's out by the jail, whatever the jail is out there on 78th Street.
Okay. So I would think that would make sense for us to be able to add a spot on our own. Whatever else we do, we would also make it quick and convenient for us to be able to list them here. At least can we look into it and see what's involved?
So the sheriff has auctions for bicycles. Once or twice a year he has an auction. But it's closed. We have on confiscated guns that were submitted. They usually go out to resale stores because they sell them in groups. But that's not advertised either. But he has cars. Yeah, things
really?
that they seize.
Equipment services, when they dispose of vehicles, they have equipment auctions, and it's on the website, and general merchandise from purchasing is on the website.
It's kind of related to we have a public notices page now. It's not, you wouldn't mix it in the same one.
No, you want another one. I can smell it coming.
Oh, you're a good smeller. So it's kind of related. People would be, maybe you can find a logical place to put whatever the auctions are, if the sheriff does regular auctions of whatever kind of cars or something, or repossess whatever properties. Anyway, it's an idea that you can find out if it makes any sense.
Yeah, and there's that's the tax foreclosure process for
And then here's the website where the property's actually auctioned. And that's a treasurer website.
So can we sell excess real estate at the same time the treasurer does on foreclosures? Would that be separate or?
Different audience. Completely different audience. Hmm.
Okay. Although the treasurer did it for the first time, I think, this year online. My memory is that he used actually a slightly different process this year than he has in the past. Once he gets the court order to sell, he also does those auctions online. But we can check the document.
Yeah. It doesn't necessarily mean that we have to host it here. We put, you know, here's our website, but it would be helpful potentially to put a link where our citizens can easily find it.
We'll put a button on the homepage. Okay, I think I got the mission there. Chris
Thank
is
you.
Chris is
yeah.
here. He has a resolution related to the Northrop Davis.
Well, it's mostly related to the risk pool.
Risk pool.
I'll explain it really briefly. The board, if you recall, in 2002, when the board signed its interlocal agreement for the risk pool, and more recently, we were obligated under our agreement to appoint a director and an alternate to serve on the board. For the risk pool, I think this year we took up that issue of an alternate. I think Mark was made one of the alternates, and one of the commissioners was made the director. The point is, since we've terminated, we've parted company from the risk pool, we're no longer a member, those appointments serve no function anymore. All this resolution would be is a bookkeeping measure to clean up things. Essentially, it says, the board has previously appointed a director and alternate to act in the role of director on the risk pool board. In light of the risk pool's prior actions, these appointments serve no ongoing purpose. The board seeks to resolve any question of its membership on the board and assignment of the representatives thereto. The prior appointments and any authority delegated by these appointments were rescinded/extinguished at the time Clark County ceased to be a member. This resolution formalizes that rescission extinguishment adopted this blank day.
So it merely implements.
Yes, sir.
If a lawsuit pops up when we were covered by the risk pool, they're still activated.
Yeah, it just means we're not a member on the pool. It doesn't mean we're not covered.
Yeah.
So if you have insurance and you shift from Allstate to Nationwide, and you have a claim from an accident you had last year, mm-hmm. it's still covered by your prior policy, regardless of what coverage you have right now. And that's the same with us in the risk pool. If we get sued for something that happened 2 years ago, regardless of whether we're currently a member, that's a covered event because there was coverage at the time of that event. So this doesn't change anything.
I have a question. When is that coverage? Has it already terminated for the risk pool?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Mark, how are we covered now, and what's the relative cost compared to what we were paying before?
We're saving over biennium about $550,000 if I don't hire anybody as a replacement.
Every 2 years.
And what's our coverage?
Identical in the sense that it's the same dollar amount, $25
really?
Million total.
Really?
So
we have a higher deductible.
It's a retention in the sense that we work our way up to that first $1 million, but we control for the most part what goes on within that first $1 million.
Yeah.
So it's not like the pool is going to say, "Oh, we're going to settle that claim whether you want us to or not." This mm-hmm. one's a little more
so
control.
So we're more in the driver's seat.
These guys will do the defense for us.
They have a lot of confidence in
yeah.
the FDA's office.
Yeah.
So we're actually saving $500,000. Is that per year?
No.
Biennium.
$275,000
a year mm-hmm. for equivalent coverage with a little more with more deductible, and we're more in the driver's seat.
Right.
Yeah, let me, just so I don't want to mislead you, so that nobody here has any other idea, it's not exactly the same deductible, or even, it's twice. It, we went from $500,000 to $1 million deductible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it is a little, it is a bit more, but on the flip side, the reduction in premiums justified that, plus the ability to control our own defense and have to also control or have the board control its own destiny with regard to the settlement of claims appeared to be worth those kind of risks. And so that's why it was proposed to the board, I think, a month and a half ago.
So you actually, you like the new situation better than the old one?
It seems to be fine. We haven't had much working day-to-day workings together, but everything seems to be fine.
And I just met with a broker today. I'm really quite pleased with the policies, both of them. We have two layers, and I'm quite pleased.
That's up to the $25 million you said, Matt.
Yeah. It is. It is. There's two layers. There's a 10, and then there's a 25. And then underneath that whole thing is our $1 million working layer for us that we operate.
How often did we hit that layer in at that level in checks?
In covered claims, barring the three, barring Spencer, Northrop, and Davis.
Those are exceptions.
Yeah, we have only ever had one claim that was $2 million, and I don't think it could have had to go that far, but that's what the pool negotiated at. For road design, and it was a 2009 claim for Fogle. Fogle was the case.
Oh, that was the Washougal
telephone
pole?
Yes, yes. Yeah. But to make a long story short, we've never had a claim that big. We've never had $1 million claim. And so I really think statistically, that's why our rates are so good.
Great. Okay.
And I'm going to do a little...
knock on the table.
Right, right, yeah.
Do we have to make a motion or just authorize that and sign it?
I would appreciate you making there being a motion in a second, so it's official.
I would make a motion that we sign the resolution for the risk pool replacement.
Termination.
And I second that motion. That's the letter in front of us.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That's efficient?
Yes. Now, is this when you fire me?
No, you're doing too good of a job.
Oh, yeah, we're changing right. Area.
Right.
Pink Flip Tuesday.
Oh, good. I passed that day over then.
Yeah, you're good. Just don't
shoot.
Thank you. I'll take it to Tina for a number.
And did we already right. Sign this up? We didn't take action on that one, did we? Did we go down
crab,
and sign it?
Crab
thing?
Yes, that's already been sent to Crab.
And
signed, sealed, delivered.
Did we vote on them?
We did.
Okay. Forget that brain fog there.
We're trying to make it more complicated.
The question was brought up about a representative for CRAB. Are you going to check in to see who, if we have one or not, or whether we're entitled to one?
I think you want to make sure
that somebody
that we have. If there, we don't want to leave a representation vacant.
Right.
Yeah.
We also have. Through WASAC, we have a member of WASAC that sits on that, too. So that'd be another one to look into.
You mean we have a separate thing, WASAC way of representation?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, just to follow up on that, the last WASAC meeting, many commissioners participated on the telephone instead of being in person. And I was one of them. And it went for hours and hours and hours. And basically, nobody on the phone could really hear. It was so bad. You could hear all the other commissioners on the phone thinking, I can't hear that. And so it was kind of meaningless. Hopefully, they're tune up their system so that you can virtually attend those meetings.
Mm-hmm.
But it was...
I think what it is the phone was too far away from the person that was speaking. I got one of those, too.
Well, they could all hear us really, really good, but we couldn't hear them. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's at the WASAC headquarters that they need to tune that up.
Okay. Salary setting. I want to get a point straight. I was quoted as saying our salaries sucked. Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, what it was, remember that we were talking about the freeholders' proposal?
The 53,000.
And it said that our salaries would remain the same for 2 years. And your position would start off at 53,000.
That's fine.
And I said, that sucks.
That's right.
I was happy with mine. I was sucking for yours.
Holy
is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Just a point of clarity.
Mark is the one that corrected the thing that you guys' salary would stay on until you
just
left office. The rest of us would, if I were still here, I'd take a wage cut.
They made a big
is that
deal
an improvement in your messaging now?
I just have to be more clear.
Yeah.
Obviously, it is.
Regarding the CRAB board, it's a 9-member board, and there are no vacancies.
So it's covered. Okay.
Fill up.
Is Bill Gantley still on there?
Bill Gantley. I didn't.
Gantley. Not Gantley.
So just to.
No, he's not.
Just to, on the salary thing, the current salary, both for you, I understand, as well as the next commissioner, is set for $106,000 per year, right?
That's for
right.
2 years. And then it switches to the 53 number on the third year.
If the charter went through. But if it doesn't, then it stays wherever it was left, and that's where it was left. That's what we inherited. And there's nothing in the books to change that.
Well, in preparation of that, we need to go back and readdress the salaries if it doesn't go through. We set our salaries, and his term ends in this position ends in December, and we have to set that salary before that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Actually, Mr. Barnes' term ends when the November election is
certified.
Certified. It's end of November.
Yeah. And you're sure getting your miles in, doing a whole bunch of homework between then. And I mean that. It's good.
So somewhere along the way, we need to go back and address those and bring those current in the assumption that, I mean, in a hopeful assumption that the charter fails.
Yeah. Just to weigh in on the salary, if we did anything with the commissioner salaries, I would be in favor of lowering it some. And I'd be open to hear what the input on that would be.
You
it's
like
pretty healthy.
You like that 53,000?
Well,
the voters are going. Whatever the voters are going to speak anyway, whatever they come up with.
Well,
I think they're going to fail, and we have to set this in preparation of.
I think maybe you got your. I think they're probably going to pass. That's my opinion.
I was sticking up for you, Ed.
I work with the prosecuting attorney's office, so I'm going to bring that forward. I'll bring that in the next week or two, the process and how it comes forward. Typically, the county administrator in the past has brought that when it needs
absolutely.
To come
up. Absolutely. Yeah. But you probably have it on your computer.
In my thoughts on this is it has nothing to do with the charter. Even if there was
you're
a
right.
charter, there's a transition time that occurs. So basically, I'm saying that regardless of what the future is, charter or no charter, if there be any changes in the county commissioner salaries, I would think that they could be lowered some.
That we'll include that in the next discussion of that.
Okay.
The minister come forward. Laptops, animal control.
I was gonna. If you weren't gonna ask, I was gonna give you an
sure
update
you
anyway.
Were.
Yes, I was. We had a very very good meeting on Monday
good.
With Linda Lotto from the assessor's office, Dean Shaddix from Public Works. Mark Wilsden from General Services, and Jeff Harbison from Public Health. They are all using mobile devices in the field, and they were all very helpful in explaining how they employ those devices in the field. Mm-hmm. And so Jim Hominick and Paul Scarpelli are going to embark on an effort to mm-hmm. procure Surface Pro 3 tablets.
Really? They're going to go there? Is that right?
Well, we're
doing more research. I mean, I know that Dean went to a meeting today,
right.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that right?
Awesome.
That's
right.
An interesting
we're gonna
device.
We're going to do some research on our use of those similar devices. In Public Works, they have development inspection. They do access TideMark, which is the same system that we
yeah.
access for.
And they have the,
so
they have the Surface, too.
We think there's an ability to do some more field work with a
yeah.
mobile device.
Yeah, and so what you do is you get a smartphone with a personal hotspot on it, you connect through your phone
uh-huh.
using Bluetooth and up to the 4G LTE network,
yeah.
back to the county servers,
yeah.
onto your desktop, and anything that's on your desktop you can access in the field. And Shaddix says it's quick. They used to use NetMotion, which is what the sheriff department has in their vehicles,
mm-hmm.
and he said it was slow and clunky. And because you're only sending keyboard characters and screenshots, it's very light on bits and bytes.
That's great. That's neat, Marty.
So
it's very quick. And so it was a very productive meeting, and everybody at the table yeah. offered to help Marty however they can. So
everybody needs to help Marty.
Yeah. Yeah. You're the gatekeeper for the community here, Marty.
I only need some
help. I'm really interested in those Surface Pro 3s. That's quite a...
I'm on overtime, guys. Let's go.
Okay.
One other thing I had brought up. I
I was corrected when someone said that in a critical habitat area that the grading permit was still at 50 yards. I thought we took action, and maybe actually remember better than I did when we did that.
One.
Yeah, she's.
We moved that to 100 yards.
Yeah.
And we did the research on why, how we got to 50, and no one knew.
But you said in critical areas.
Might be some of the SEPA.
I thought it was straight across the board. Anything over 100, over 100
it varies
yards would need a grading permit.
It varies depending on where you're at and what you're doing, how much land you're on.
Okay.
So we'll have to get the grading code to you. It's been
What this was,
probably 2 years.
Was a critical habitat area.
Right.
And so and the guy said, I haven't moved 100 yards. And he said that they came back and told him.
I want to say it's 50 because yards. It's SEPA also.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure because I knew that we did action on it and we moved it to 100 yards. I thought it was straight across the board.
I don't believe so, but we can check.
We can check on that.
Okay. The grading code.
Information on the website, Home Rule Charter. Understand we have two things on there, one done by the PIO and one done by the freeholders. And I thought we talked about what should be on there would be only the freeholders.
Which part
I'm talking about?
If we're talking about the charter summary?
Yeah, so what there is, there's several pages of charter web documents promoting the charter.
What I would suggest before looking at any of that, that we really listen to our PA's office to see what they had for their guidance before we look into it.
I think the intent, anything that we had on there, would be on the freeholders, and we don't change that. We cannot change that. The freeholders put that on there as your positive statement.
Well, all the documents, Commissioner, that are on the freeholder webpage were approved by the freeholders.
The grid.
On the freeholder grid. staff may have assisted.
But we have two separate ones.
Well, one's a frequently asked question, and one's a summary. Is that what we're talking about?
I think what you're speaking of is you're not suggesting that any changes at all be made to the freeholder grid, those documents. Yeah.
No, I recognize what should be there, only what the freeholders put on there.
Which is the ones on the grid.
Make sure that what we're doing is legal.
What we talked about a week or two ago is that to balance that out would be the same people that would do the opposition. Well, you can't have one without the other because then you violate the law as for the county promoting an initiative or something.
We were going to talk about this. That was the item scrubbed from executive session.
We'll keep scrubbing it. All right.
What you got?
I'm looking. Well, and we can address it later. One of the things that came up was the methadone fees. Having to do we'll discuss it later. One of the things, if you remember what was brought up, was the methadone fees will be freed up for other uses, and I was wanting to make sure that we were key in deciding if the methadone fees were to be used for something else, that we would help decide what they were used for.
Yeah, I think you're referring to the early adoption, freeing up mental health monies, and the board wants to determine what uses we'll apply those funds for,
right.
And that's in Vanessa's plan.
Okay.
Vanessa,
the board.
She will bring all that to you, and you will bless the plan.
And I have some related update on that, because I sit on the three commissioner RSN board. Right now, Skamania County, Clark County, and Cowlitz County are the three that form the regional service network for mental health services. That is changing, being that now it'll be Klickitat County, Skamania County, and Clark County will have all elected to bind ourselves together into a new body that will be the early adopters to integrate chemical dependency, physical health, and behavioral health.
The date on that is 2015 or 2016?
The current, the current interlocal agreement for the RSN wraps up December of 2015.
Okay.
But there are the early adopter has earlier time frames than that, so there will be going through a transition
in
order to form that new organism, that new body.
Okay, so
we'll have a different.
You can do that right away, or you'll wait until.
It's a pretty aggressive time frame. That's why they call it early adopter. That we'll be navigating with the prosecuting attorneys from each of the three counties,
okay,
and the other board of commissioners from the other counties.
I was glad to see click at that in Skamania County.
Yeah.
Them all decide to do the right thing.
Yes,
I think eventually Calix will realize they made a big mistake to come aboard.
Oh, that's why they have their own governing board or their own commissioners.
Here's our chance to get him out of our hair.
Sometimes people can't see the forest for the trees, though.
Yeah. Mr. Mielke, I have three quick things.
I got a typo here.
If I may. Davey. Davy Jones' locker. Commissioners, the YMCA of Clark County has an annual summer picnic at Frenchman's Bar, and for the last 3 years, we've waived the fees for them.
Who's that?
The YMCA of Vancouver.
Okay.
They operate the only domestic violence shelter in all of Clark County, and they have an annual fundraiser and picnic to acknowledge volunteers and so on, and they're asking if
all those in favor.
Aye.
Great.
You motion. I second. We aye.
Oh, excuse me. I'm showing my bias. So YWCA. Excuse me.
In the legislature, we always say last line.
Derek,
last line.
Thank you for. Does that include? Does that include invite to the two commissioners?
Well, actually, I toured their facility right down here in Vancouver, and they are not connected
awesome.
To the YMCA. They're an amazing organization that helps just provide wonderful help to those individuals that need help.
Okay, Mark Roger.
Okay, the Veterans Advisory Board has asked CVTV to tape and air their board meetings on CVTV. And that's a commitment of resources that we help pay for, and so how do you feel about that?
I think that might keep their committee straight.
Well,
I'm thinking, yeah.
First of all, I support it. This county does a really good job supporting our veterans, and those dedicated band of brothers and sisters there that work to help them out do a great job. The costs of CVTV, they don't bill any of these. They won't bill them, and they won't bill us for their time. Instead, that's one of the benefits that we get when we are funders of that organization, and they're funded by the Comcast fees as well, right?
Yeah.
So that's just simply saying cover another very important.
One of the benefits of this is the fact that the veterans have not been able to get their story out as much as they should to other veterans mm-hmm. that don't realize mm-hmm. what's out there available for them, and this will give them an opportunity to pick up more people to
yes, make
get
more
involved.
Visible.
Get
okay.
more
By visible. The way, related to that, I had the pleasure, the privilege, really, of being inducted into the 40 at 8 organization this last Saturday. Walked through
I'm
and
sorry,
thank you.
I
you nominated
this.
Me. Thank
I
you very much.
This.
I appreciate that. Talk about.
I wanted to be there.
Did
Jerry Keane?
No, he didn't. But there were a number of just wonderful.
I had a whole bunch of co-signers.
Thank
Only
you.
Only one black ball.
Well, it's kind of like if you enlist in you name the branch of the service. I enlisted in the Navy. You start out as a worm. They tear you down to nothing, and they build you up, hopefully, into a man. Well, anybody who's going to be inducted in that organization, you start out as a goof. Okay? You wear a goof button, and
so
you serve.
Make sure that we go to the next breakfast Saturday morning. No, Friday morning.
Friday morning, 6:30 in the morning.
Is it this Saturday, 4th of July, too?
No, I don't think so.
I'm going to go just to see these guys goof bags.
Actually, I already graduated. They
no
they,
way.
When they induct you in, they get to take that off, and you get to wear a hat.
Okay. All right. Next, that's all you got? Axel, do you have anything?
Yep, a couple quick things. Judge Zimmerman wants me to pen a letter for you to sign to support the Veterans Community Garden at Mabry Work Center. They got 2 acres there, and they're going to create a garden, and they're applying to Home Depot for $5,000 for supplies and things. I figured you guys would be okay with that. But
who's that, Doug?
Judge Zimmerman's asking for
Doug Zimmerman.
I'm sorry, I faded out on part of that.
Judge Zimmerman, they're working on creating a Veterans Community Garden at the Mabry Work Center facility. They've got 2 acres. They're going to do raised beds.
Great.
They'll utilize some of the light-duty inmates for some of the work and help, and then they're applying to Home Depot for a grant. So he wants a support letter from the three of you.
Oh, absolutely.
Is there
a
legal problem there?
Using the trustees?
I'm not sure.
I mean, I'd like to have them go out and sweep the sidewalks, but I don't know if we can.
Yeah, I don't know. But they'll look into it. And sure. he'll do it all with Rick Bishop.
Okay.
And, you know,
sure.
It's going to be
I
done,
assume.
Right?
Yeah, so
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
okay.
The same folks wash the police car fleet, and they also do garbage pickup
right.
around the campus, so we already use them to some extent.
And Judge Darvin Zimmerman, it's like he's got multiple clones. He goes so many places, and he does so many things.
Go the other way. So.
He's really dedicated.
What else you got, Axel?
We can send these troops up to the mountain up there to clean up the dust.
Hurry up, Axel.
Well,
you
can
off check. This is. I think you'll be okay with this, but I want to check in with you. I had a woman call this week and talk to me about what I think is a pretty reasonable request to look at our noise ordinance. That's always kind of
fun
because it's a difficult ordinance to both enforce and write. But her issue was she lives across from a subdivision that's going in right now, and it's very noisy, the construction. And she understands that, but I did look at our ordinance in relation to some others, and it's pretty broad. It basically says for this kind of construction, operation of power equipment and stuff, from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m., 7 days a week, you can do it. You're exempt. And that I kind of looked at it a few times. I said, that seems real broad. So anyhow, I just wanted to tell you that I'm going to look at some other counties' codes. I found another one where at least on the weekends there's some relief. You're exempt after 10 a.m. and until like 8 p.m. But it's not you know having a power saw going next door from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. So I'm just going to look into it. I'm going to see if I can find maybe some better examples.
Sundays?
Yes, 7 days a week, every day.
I'm sure glad Betty Sue's here because she could probably give some history on that and tell us how we got there.
Take their chaplain or minister out there to say grace while they're saying
Well, it actually invocation I think that comes from the Washington State Administrative Code minimum.
Okay, here's how I understand our noise. Whether we have any ordinance, suppose we don't have any ordinance at all, it has to do with noise. We still enforce the WAC. State WAC.
Correct.
And that's very specific. It says what the decibels they are, what the hours are. We do that. And the only time that we modify that ordinance is to make it more liberal.
You can't.
Actually, no.
More restrictive.
More restrictive.
You can
so we can't allow people to make more noise more often. So isn't that already covering that situation?
No.
We can make it more restrictive or less restrictive with the permission of the state. But in this case, I think that number is the WAC minimum. I think that comes from the WAC. I think I checked it, and it says that kind of stuff is okay between these hours. What I think we should look at is something like a Sunday or weekends where, you know, your neighbor shouldn't probably be allowed to cut down trees on his property next to your house from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m.
That means I can't mow my lawn on Sunday?
Not after 8 p.m. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out.
It doesn't get dark till 9:30.
Well, I know, and I think that's part of the issue.
Betty Sue, I need your help.
They're working late.
She
knows about
this. Can you send us an email with the link to the state ordinance again, or the WAC? Because I... it's been a little while since I looked at it, but no, I think it's not only the number of hours and the decibels in those hours, but I think it also differentiates between weekends. I'm not sure, but my fuzzy memory tends to recall that. Anyway, if you can refresh us on that.
Yep. Because that's all I was just going to do, was just look into
that
it.
That may already address what your concerns are. But I don't know, what does the LAC say again?
Okay.
Anything else?
I'm good.
That's why, Martin? I'm sticking around. No, that's why I stuck around.
Hanging around?
That's why I stuck around.
You were hanging around for the entertainment, weren't you?
I was hanging around for the noise.
Well, before we close and whatnot, I want to compliment our administrator for his choice in shirts.
Huh?
Oh, man. I didn't even know this.
That's the only compliment I've ever gotten.
Ready to strike
the board chair.
Few and far between these days.
Actually, I would like to compliment our administrator for doing a great job in one particular area. If you guys haven't discovered this already.
Be careful. We're being recorded.
All you need to do, if you want to know something on the web right now, before you leave the room, this guy can normally find it and get the answer and email it to you. This is Mr. Webb GS.
Any do-overs? We're done.
Thank you.
Thank you.